Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 144 of Wheat All About It, or what I'm calling WSU's Aaron Esser Has the Second Best Job in Agriculture, about my conversation with the Adams and Lincoln County Extension Agronomist, on-farm testing associate, and the guy who helps wrangle research on the 340-acre Wilkie Research and Extension Farm located just east of Davenport, Washington. Oh, and until mid-August, when Clark Neely got to Pullman from Texas A&M to replace him, Esser was also WSU's interim director of the Cereal Variety Testing Program. I like pretty much everybody I meet in agriculture, but I particularly like Esser, who not only puts his shoulder to the wheel when a challenge presents itself, but who tells me he listens to Wheat All About It podcasts while he's doing it. But that's not why I visited him at the Wilkie Farm on July 23, 2019. I visited because I was out of town and missed the Wilkie Farm field day. Darn! I remember coming out for field days at the Wilkie Farm 20 years ago when visitors were greeted by a few picnic tables, metal chairs, a couple of porta-potties, and not much else. How times change. The Wilkie Farm now has a large metal building that any farmer would be proud to park his equipment in. The farm's claim to fame when it was created 20 years ago was its strips. Small plots are notoriously unreliable for determining whether a particular practice or rotation is going to work on a larger acreage, so the farmers and researchers who organized the Wilkie Farm decided to go to large strips that could use commercial equipment to plant, spray, and harvest, providing a much better picture of what practices and crops might pay off economically. One of the things I like about Esser is he's so gosh darn personable, a trait I associate with most extension personnel. Who wants to be educated by a grump, right? Communication is key, but then so is knowing your audience, and Esser, the son of a farmer, is superb at making connections. It was a beautiful day in the country when I arrived at the Wilkie Farm, and Esser and I jumped immediately into his truck to see the sights. But before we got into the crops and the weeds, I asked him to describe Wilkie Farm. His description includes a mention of Dwayne Beck, whose work as an agronomist at the Dakota Lakes Research Farm has emphasized developing no-till systems in central South Dakota, and who has inspired many farmers in the Northwest.
The Wilkie Project really started back in 1998 when a group of growers got together with a piece of ground that Beulah Wilkie donated to WSU, with the stipulation that it must have some form of research on the piece of property. And out of that, a lot of visioning sessions and everything else were set up to develop a farm that had real life situations and using commercial equipment. A lot of the farmers were going back to Dwayne Beck and saw what Beck was doing on his farm, and they really saw Wilkie Farm kind of servicing what Beck's farm was doing for those farmers back in that region. And it's the only research facility that WSU has in the intermediate rainfall zone. You know, they have the Lynn Dryland Research Facility at Lynn, of course. They have the Spillman Research Facility in the higher rainfall zone down by Pullman, the conservation farm in the higher rainfall zone. And then they have the Othello and Prosser research stations for irrigated, but this is the only facility in the intermediate production zone.
And intermediate would be the 14 to 16?
12 to about 12 to 16 inches. This is about a 14-inch rainfall right here. So 12 to 16, 17 inches.
Tell me about the strip trials here and why you went to this strip trial approach.
Well, the strips were in here, they've been here for a long time, and they kind of morphed. It used to be 21 strips, and they were about 8-9 acres in size. And a while ago, to make it a little bit easier to spray and manage and everything else, we took those 21 strips and we broke them down into 7 strips, which has been here for a fair bit of time. On the south side of the farm, when you look at these 7 strips, it's 3 of these strips are in a 3-year rotation. That means one of the strips is in summer fallow, One of them is in spring cereal, and the other one is in winter wheat. And then there's four strips that we maintain in a four-year rotation. So there's one in summer fallow, one in winter wheat, one in a broadleaf crop, which happens to be canola this year, spring canola, and then a spring cereal. And we don't pigeonhole ourselves into a dark northern spring wheat. When I say spring cereal, that can be dark northern, it can be soft white, it can be barley, based on which one gives us the best opportunity to make a return on our investment. Same thing on the winter wheat side. It could be winter trit, it could be hard red, soft white, club wheat, whatever. We don't pigeonhole ourselves into stuff like that. On the broadleaf crop, we've had Oriental mustard 1 year, which is extremely profitable. We've had canola a fair amount. 2 years ago, we had chickpeas as our broadleaf crop.
Well, what is the philosophy of the Wilkie Farm Committee? I mean, everyone tells me that wheat is what makes you money, and yet here you are trying all these diverse rotations, and yet wheat makes the money.
We still have a lot of wheat on the farm, and earlier, Scott, you asked a question about what distinguishes the Wilkie Farm from the other farms, you know, the Lynn Dryland Research Station and the Spillman Farm. One of the primary things that distinguishes this farm as well is my operating budget from WSU is zero. I have no budget, operating budget at all from WSU. So the only way I can run this farm is what we generate from crop sales. It's the only way I have any operating money at all. And that shocks a lot of people. But I have to, you know, my job as a Wilkie, with the chair of the Wilkie Farm Committee, is to make sure the Wilkie farm account is positive. And so we do everything possible to try to generate revenue and profit and return and make a positive return on our investment.
Does any of your salary come from the crops on the farm?
My salary is not, but my support staff, yes. All the equipment we've bought or have gotten has come from what we generate from the farm. Or, you know, I've had a couple people really step up and have been generous donors. Al Johnson just donated a no-till drill to the farm. So now I don't have to rely on someone coming in and custom seed the farm. And we got it set up with Precision Ag, so I can do site-specific fertilizer with it, and that really expands the amount of research and stuff now we can do with that trial.
You're really looking at this as a systems approach, but with wheat in the throne, so to speak.
Yeah. You know, the three-year rotation is what farmers traditionally use around here. And with the four-year rotation, what we're trying to show, and I think we've positively identified year after year, is that a farmer can incorporate a broadleaf crop into the rotation, stretched from a 3 to 4 year rotation, and economically they're equal to the standard 3 year rotation.
Now there's a lot of farmers who are just simply going to a 2 year rotation of winter wheat and spring wheat and fallow.
And you know, there's pluses and minuses to it. And you know, Scott, I like, you know, I got my degree in economics, and I really like having a long-term plan and stretch for it. And one of the things, even in the 3-year rotation, the 4 years rotation, one of the things, it's a lot easier for me to do weed control in the 4-year rotation than it is in the 3-year rotation. And when you drop to a 2-year rotation, that also has some weed control implications, where you end up fighting more of the downy brome in those winter annual grasses, goat grass, downy brome, and stuff, where across this farm, last few years, we've been able to forgo the applications for downy brome control.
Wow, that's huge.
So that's been nice. I mean, looking through this winter wheat, do you see any downy brome out there? You'll find one or two, but there's not going to be a lot. And there had no control on it.
Wow, that's great. This shows what rotation can do for weed control then.
And that's, you know, and long-term, in the long term, when I look at, you know, I work a lot with different growers and stuff, and I always want to work on stuff that keeps them awake at night. You know, what's those things that wake you up and almost like haunt you? And, you know, I think over the next 3 to 5, 7 years, weed control is what's really going to, it's already starting to haunt a lot of farmers, and it's only going to start getting worse when we start, you know, every week you talk to these weed scientists, they're documenting new herbicide resistance, new this, new that, and the only thing that's not new is a lot of new chemistries coming down the pipeline. And so having a long-term approach, there's never been a substitute for good management.
We were just over on the south side of the Wilkie Farm. We crossed Highway 2. We're on the north side. Tell me what we're seeing here on the north side.
Over on the north side, you know, I talked about the two different rotations we have on the south side. On the north side, we have a long history, a lot longer than myself, of just being continuously cropped. No summer fallow. And historically, it was continuous cereal. So we did a lot of rotation going barley, soft white spring wheat, and then recrop winter wheat, and then back to barley, soft or dark northern, hard red winter wheat, or whatever, some form or function of that.
And how does the economics compare on the north side versus the south side?
On the north side, it's historically always lagged behind, and when I do any of the numbers, it's significantly less than what we can generate on the south side of the farm.
And why is that? Because, I mean, you have a whole other crop over here in the year that the south side is in fallow.
And, you know, a lot of it comes down to on the recrop winter wheat, we've really suffered trying to get a yield out of recrop winter wheat, and that has historically led to more issues with weed control. We historically spend more money on weed control on a per acre basis on the north side of the farm than we do on the south. And then when you start looking at summer fallow, we still try to figure out ways to reduce the summer fallow and things like that, but it's still economically, it is a benefit for a couple different reasons. If you can go summer fallow and then a 90 bushel winter wheat crop, you have to have two spring wheat crops of 45 bushel just to equal yield, but that's not even a true comparison because you got extra twice as much seed, more fertilizer, twice the weed control in the spring wheat crop is what you do in that one winter wheat crop. So you actually have to have more spring wheat. So economically, you know, it's on those north side of the road, it's on those dry years, the three-year rotation where that rotation shorter with more winter wheat emphasis will be more profitable. On the wetter years where we have above average precip, the four-year rotation and the spring crops can carry themselves a little bit better. On the continuously cropped, on the dry year, you really take it, you know, it really comes back to bite you.
Yes, yes. Get you in the shorts, so to speak. There are some people that are out in this region, not specifically this region, but perhaps in the Edwall area, who are just doing continuous spring crops. Are you investigating that?
Well, that's one of the reasons we're keeping that north side of the farm in continuous grain production, is to help supplement, see what's going on in those situations. Unfortunately, they're probably doing a better job economically than we are in our continuous cereals, and they've kind of backed away from the recrop winter wheat, and I think overall that's probably been a good move for them because of the weeds and stuff, and you can do a better, just as good a job probably going spring wheat and have it cleaner as you can going with recrop winter wheat. So that's one of the, like I said, that's one of the reasons we're keeping that continuous going.
As part of your field day that you had out here this year, and I apologize because I was at a meeting in Minneapolis when you had that field day, but you did emphasize weeds. Why did you emphasize weeds?
You know, I may have mentioned earlier, I like to work on things that keep farmers up at night. And when I look at what's going to keep farmers up at night in the near future, it's going to be weed control. Herbicide resistance, you know, and where we're at. And they're getting harder to control no matter what. And, you know, so I wanted to give farmers an opportunity to talk with the weed scientist. And, you know, it was a great day, a lot of interaction, a lot of great questions. And sometimes it's nice for those guys to get out of, to listen to people talk and find out what they're looking at, what's going on, and what they're working and not working on. There's some pretty cool stuff that Dr. Burke and Drew Lyon are doing, you know, Rise Up Smart Grass, trying to flush the seed bank. The quickest way to, the easiest way to beat weeds is you got to go after the seed bank. So we're trying some unique things to go after that seed bank to see if we can flush it, get rid of it, and then move on.
All right. So we're looking at a fallow field in front of us. It looks like chem fallow, correct?
Yes. Yes, it is. Everything on this farm has been no-till fallowed or no-till farm since 1997, I think. I got here in 98, and it's been continuously no-tilled since then.
I remember when no-till started in this region for the second time, and farmers were trying chem fallow, and it actually, there was a learning curve to chem fallow. What is that learning curve?
If you ever heard me talk, Scott, first of all, I don't like the term chem fallow. We use no-till fallow on this farm, and we use herbicides to control the weeds, not chemicals.
And you make that distinction because?
I once got caught in a situation with a group, and I said, you know, back when I was first starting, I said, yeah, I'm looking at this research on chemical fallow, and we're doing this and this, and, you know, less blowing dust going across the highway, and all of a sudden all these hands going up, well, what kind of chemicals are you using? And how much chemicals? And they kept going back and forth on chemical, and I couldn't get them off the subject. And I sat there and scratched my head and go, that didn't work like I thought it was going to work. And they completely threw the whole thing onto chemicals. And so I wanted to change up the terminology, and because chemicals has such a negative connotation with it. And so I wanted to, instead of chemical fallow, we use no-till fallow, and we don't use chemicals, we use herbicides to control the weeds.
As you look out at a wheat crop at this point, can you pretty much eyeball what the yield is going to be, or is it always a surprise?
It's an absolute surprise each and every time. I've done too many trials before where I'm like, wow, this treatment looks so much better, and we harvested it, and I'm like, what the heck is going on? And, you know, stop the combine, or we have to be losing grain somewhere. You know, what happened? Did we start harvesting incorrect? It's so hard to look at a crop and guesstimate what it's going to be. I've had some stuff where, you know, I could walk through without stepping on a plant, and I was absolutely, you know, doing the farmer thing where I wait and hoping for a hailstorm to come through and take it out. And then I harvested it, and I'm like, whoa, what happened? There was grain in that. And there's other stuff that's thick, and you think, all right, this stuff's rolling in. And then you start looking, you know, the bulk tank test doesn't match. So I'm always surprised each and every time I put a header into stuff.
Yes, yes. It all comes down to the dollars and cents in the bottom line. And while farmers can have terrific yields, if they do not have the economic sustainability, it doesn't matter.
You still got to, return on your investment. Every dollar, you know, every dollar we spend, we want to make an adequate return on it. Even when I... You know, on the Wilkie Farm thing, one of the first things that I noticed is, you know, the Wilkie Farm would get their money or get their crop, take it to the warehouse, and then they'd sell it. I'm like, we're given educational programs on grain marketing, yet we're doing the absolute worst job of anyone marketing our grain. So even on this facility, I have a marketing plan in place. I don't have all the tools that farmers can use. But I do have a thing in place, and I'm looking for what will potentially give me my best rate of return. And if I can get a forward contract that will give me a 20% return on my investment, and I have a pretty good idea what my cost is, I will pull the trigger and take some forward contracts.
I guess I'm a little surprised the university lets you take the risk.
That's a funny situation. When it first came up and I said I wanted to do a forward contract, they said, you know, yeah, Aaron, well, let's see what we can do. Can you send me the contract? So I sent it down to WSU, and then it went to the Washington Attorney General's office. Then it went back to WSU's, to the Risk Management Office, and then went back to the guy who manages the land. And he says, oh, guess what? We can now do a forward contract. I said, well, that's great because it's gone and passed 3 months ago. But it allowed me to, now that they accept it, I can go ahead and do it. And I have some parameters to do it with, much like I'd consult a grower to do. You know, we use the crop insurance and what we're insured against. I won't go over what we're insured against or anything else. And, you know, I do 10 bushel an acre increments. And right now I have, if we have our average yields at 20 bushel an acre already marketed off of this farm.
Does it really make that much difference what varieties farmers plant?
Being that I was running the statewide variety testing program for the last year and a half, my answer should be absolutely yes. But in long and short, Scott, there's a lot of good varieties of wheat out there. You know, it's not like it was 20 years ago when I started this job where it was Eltan and Breel in this country and some Matson. There's a lot of good stuff that farmers can plant as long as they have everything else in place. If they have their weed control in place, their fertilizer program in place, their crop rotation in place, I can give them a lot of good varieties that will be just fine in those situations. And it's a credit to the breeders. They've really stepped it up across the region, and we have seen some of those gains. When you start looking at, you know, where we had Matson and Eltan for so many years, go look at the yield data and find out, start scrolling down and find out how far down the list those varieties are. And it's a compliment to the breeders and what they've done to take these varieties that were absolutely staples around here that really, you know, kind of took wheat production to a whole new level. And look at where those are at now on the variety list. They're down.
Absolutely. Good point. Good point. Now, you're a farmer in all but name, right?
Yes. I always say that I have the second best job around, and they say, well, what's the best job? I always tell them that you guys have the best job.
WSU has been blessed to have many sterling agronomists, going back to the first one I met, Kenny Morrison. Like Esser, Morrison and the other agronomists I respect, John Burns and Bill Schillinger come to mind, have the ability to communicate complicated concepts in a coherent manner that is serious but never stern. I've been extraordinarily lucky to have these men, along with dozens of farmers themselves, educate me, an unschooled city dweller, in the intricacies of wheat farming. If Esser has the second best job in agriculture, then I complete the trifecta with the third best job. I hope you've enjoyed episode 144 of Wheat All About It, or what I'm calling WSU's Aaron Esser Has the Second Best Job in Agriculture. Please join me here again next week for the second part of my conversation with Esser, when we'll discuss wireworms, canola, winter peas, as well as the research farm's new steel building called Rogers Shed. All that and more, right here on Wheat All About It!
We're all children of a special treat, a miracle of nature that we just call wheat. A crop that's in the Bible, a crop that's in our bread, a crop that's filled our bellies and held us in good stead. Through a history of starvation and times of want and woe, wheat has been our savior, our grub, our gruel, our dough. There's always lots of problems when we have enough to eat, but there's only one dilemma when it's not enough wheat. We feed you.